in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 15, we have something that we all desire as Christians, a clear, express declaration of the will of God for us. And we say, what is the will of God? What does He want me to do? Well, there's a number of places where that is told to us very directly, and here's one. For so is the will of God, that with well-doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. And we were looking last time at what the will of God is and what well-doing is. And the purpose of our well-doing or our practice of good is to stop the mouths or cause to be still the lips of foolish men who are ignorant, to silence them. And we said that what the foolish and ignorant men do is they speak evil of Christians and falsely accuse us for our good conversation in Christ. And yet we are to so live that they, all their accusations and arguments against us will be brought to nothing. They will be quieted. And as a good helpmeet so often does, my wife pointed out a verse in Psalm 107. That's what good helpmeets are for. Psalm 107. Talks about some of the things that God does against the wicked and for His people. Verse 42 says, "The righteous shall see it and rejoice." All right, so that's the response of a Christian to God's works. Gladness. "And all iniquity shall stop her mouth." Of course, iniquity there would be put for the workers of iniquity. In other words, their mouths would be stopped by God. "Whoso is wise and will observe these things, even they shall understand the loving kindness of the Lord." All right, so it's a part of wisdom to be observant of how God does these things. And the result is it will bring us to an understanding of God's loving kindness. Now, the next thing Peter tells us is who it is that we are to put to silence. Some people, it's better that they just shut up. They talk, but everything they say is worthless. It's of no value. They just spout off and yet say nothing that has any real substance or validity or any usefulness to it. And he tells us who they are: ignorant and foolish men. Now, one of the worst things about ignorance is it's very often vocal. People who talk the most have the least to say so often. And it seems like Proverbs so often says that, you know, the wicked, their mouth is full of talk. And yet, it's vain talk. And so, here's how we can quiet some of these things. Now, ignorance of foolish men, that would be talking about the unsaved in general. Those who are without the knowledge of God and spiritual things, who do not know Jesus Christ and the salvation that God has given us through Him. Anyone without Christ in a state of unbelief is foolish. And it's interesting, if you read the Bible carefully, that foolishness and wickedness are very often used interchangeably. They're synonymous. To sin is the most foolish thing you can do. But it's to transgress the law of a holy God and put ourselves under His just judgment, to bring His wrath upon our heads and to destroy our souls for eternity. There's never a good reason to sin. It's never wise. It's never smart. It's never expedient. You can never find a valid argument for it. And the fact that men are sinners, it shows their ignorance. If they had the knowledge of what's right, if they were intelligent, spiritually speaking, they would not live in these ways. Now, when it says the ignorance, this is giving us a characteristic of unregenerate men. They do not have the true knowledge of God and spiritual things. They're most often described in the Bible as they who do not know God. Now, they may be very intelligent people. They may have a very high IQ. They may even pass for geniuses in the world. You know, lawyers and doctors and scientists and whatever. But the beginning of knowledge is the fear of the Lord. And if they are lacking the fear of the Lord, they have no true, no absolute, no full knowledge. They may have their minds filled with facts. They may be able to go about certain activities in a very proper and a very successful way. They may be efficient in their callings, and yet be ignorant men. 1 Corinthians 15:34. Someone like to read that? Okay, Jordan. 1 Corinthians 15:34. Chapter 15 and verse 34. He says it's a shameful thing. Some do not have the knowledge of God, and as a result, they were sinning. Paul says you need to wake up. You know, come alive. Smarten up. Find out about God and His holy character. He's a righteous God. He demands righteousness in His creatures. Those that He has made after His own image as moral beings. So start living as you should, as God would have you live. And until you do, you're walking in darkness and ignorance. And that's why the world is living such wicked lifestyles. They don't have the knowledge of God. They're spiritually ignorant. Now, that's a sad condition to be in, ignorant. Now, you talk about that in the natural sense, and when you call someone ignorant, that's a pretty strong statement. You're saying they're dumb, they're stupid, they lack knowledge or information. They're not able to live or function properly because they don't have the intelligence to do what they should. Well, that's true of every man who's outside of Christ. You have a lot of blundering, blustering idiots. They're going around living under God's heaven, and they don't know what they're all about. They don't know where they came from, why they're here, where they're going, or how to get there, and how they should live in the meanwhile, or what God is like, or what He expects of us. That's ignorance. And it's because there's, you know, like in Romans 3, it says, there's none that understands, there's none that seeks God. It says, there's no fear of God before their eyes, and the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. They have no fear of God, and so they're utterly destitute of true wisdom and knowledge. What's the most important thing anyone can know? In Jeremiah, chapter 9. Now it's amazing. An unsaved man looks at a Christian and says, "What a fool! What a dummy. Look at how he's throwing his life away and wasting his life trying to serve some God that probably isn't even there." And they think it's ridiculous. And then a Christian who knows better, who knows God personally, knows He is there and has faith, looks at that unsaved man and shakes his head and says, "The fool says in his heart there is no God." And they run around like a bunch of dummies because they refuse to take God into their minds and into their considerations. The wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. Anyway, in Jeremiah 9:23 it says, "Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom." Now that's humanly speaking, worldly wise. What's the Bible call human wisdom in God's eyes? Foolishness. That's right. The wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. So don't get all puffed up. Don't boast about your wisdom. Neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Here's a man who has reached high levels of power in this world. It may be kings, princes, governors, others of great position and influence, fame, and clout. That's nothing to get all excited about. Don't let that mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches. Now there's something people really get caught up with. How much is he worth? Now this just shows where America's value systems lie. You have a list comes out every year of the, the 25 most wealthy men in America, and they say this one's worth this many billion, that one's worth that many billion, and it's like, so what? After you put food in your stomach and clothes on your back, anything beyond that is superfluous, extra. And you can have $16 billion extra like David Gates or whatever, or you can have $5 extra. You're both in the same state. You're both as well off. If you have food in your stomach, clothes on your back, of course, as Christians, we would say something to give to those in need or to the work of the gospel. You don't need any more than that. And anything beyond that is extra. Trappings. So, in other words, they have just more trappings. But when it comes down to the basic essentials, they may be eating a little higher on the hog or whatever. They may have a little more fancy clothes, but it comes down to the same thing. Money is it's a necessary commodity, but nothing to make your God or make your goal or try to make your value or importance based on. Not at all. But let him that glories, glory in this. Here's God himself saying is, if you want something to be proud of, to boast in, and to take, your glory in, this is it. That he understands and knows me, that I am the Lord. Now when I say boast in, when we make our boast, we make our boast in the Lord, because no man seeks God, no man understands. God gives us the knowledge of himself, so we can't even take credit for that. If God left us to ourselves, we would continue in our ignorance and our pride and our stubbornness and our rebellion, and we would run straight to hell, away from God as fast as we could go, unless he turned us around and brought us to the knowledge of himself, which is that he exercises loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord. Well, is that you? Do you know these things? Do you know the Lord and what he's like? His character and his conduct? Then you've got something of true value that will last for eternity, where the other things are only for a time. They are not of true value. And eventually, either they leave us or we leave them, never to see them again. Now, they're ignorant, but their ignorance is not a misfortune. Now, if somebody can't help but be ignorant, they didn't have a chance to know better, and it wasn't their fault, then you have to feel sorry for them. Yes, we feel sorry for the unsaved, but as far as God is concerned, their ignorance is not a misfortune. It's a guilty ignorance. In other words, that's something they're responsible for. It's willful and obstinate. They choose to be ignorant. They desire and prefer ignorance. And when the knowledge of God is offered to them or made available, they spurn it and reject it and refuse it. In other words, they wouldn't have to be ignorant. They have every opportunity, especially in America. Who has to be ignorant of God and the gospel? No one has to be. But many are. And why? They want to be. Someone like to read Ephesians 4, 17 to 19? Okay, Joel. Ephesians 4, 17 to 19. Romans 1, 28. Who would like to read that? Okay, Liz. Ephesians 4, 17 to 19. Okay. Boy, what a description. Gentiles are the unsaved. What's it say about their mind? It's vain. That means it's empty, worthless, of no value, futile. And then how are they described? A darkened understanding, alienated or cut off from God's life, they're dead in their sins. And what is brought? How does this come about? Through the ignorance that's in them. Right? They have ignorance in them. Why? Because of their blind hearts. Or hard hearts. What's Romans 1:28 say? Alright, what came first? They did not like, it was not their desire or preference, they did not have any inclination or delight in retaining God in their knowledge. They put God out. You know, like we read that verse last week, you know, where they say, go away from us, we do not desire the knowledge of your ways. That's what they tell God. They don't acknowledge God, and so God, in turn, gives them a reprobate mind, a mind void of judgment, which leads to all their wicked behavior. And if anything's obvious in America, no God in Bible and prayer in school, no God in Bible and prayer in government, no God in prayer, Bible at the workplace, what are they saying? We don't want to retain knowledge of God. We want to get God out of every area of our life so that we can live without Him and not have to be reminded of Him. That's what they're doing. It's this very thing. And why do you think America is full of pornography and homosexuality and every kind of debauchery and evil, you know, drunkenness and just the worst kind of living, one of the most immoral nations in the Western world? Why? God's given us over. All right? That's how you want to be? You can have the fruit of your own folly. You remember how, again, in... trying to think of a verse here. So this time Isaiah. And I believe it's chapter 27. Yep, chapter 27, verse 11. When the bowels thereof are withered, they shall be broken off. The women come and set them on fire, for it is a people of no understanding. Therefore he that made them will not have mercy on them, and he that formed them will show them no favor. Notice, because they're without understanding, God's not going to show any mercy or favor to them, because it's a responsible ignorance they're guilty of. So unbelievers are without understanding. Remember, that's what Romans 3:11 says. There is none that understands. There's none that seeks after God. And as a result, they live evil lives. You remember how 1 Peter 1:14 said that? As obedient children, that's how Christians are to live. In obedience to God. Holy lives. Not fashioning yourselves according to the former lusts. Remember how you used to live such wicked lives? before you knew the Lord? Why did you live that way? It was a time of your ignorance. You lived according to your former lusts in your state of ignorance. So again, a little knowledge is dangerous, they say. Well, ignorance is very dangerous. We do not subscribe to the Roman Catholic dogma that ignorance is the mother of devotion. That's what they say. The less you know, the more you'll be blindly obedient to the church. We don't subscribe to that at all. Ignorance is the mother of sin and superstition, and not of devotion. Now, the next thing Peter says about these men that we're to put to silence is that they are foolish men. And of course, it only goes to reason that ignorance and foolishness would be closely related and go together. This says that they are without the wisdom of God. Their ignorance says they're without the knowledge of God. Now their folly shows that they're without the wisdom of God. Someone want to read Jeremiah 4:22, Steve? Okay. Give you a chance here, Robin. Jeremiah 4:22. Boy, what a description. Foolish people. They don't know God. Sodish children. They don't have understanding. Well, they can do evil, fine. No problem there. But they just don't seem to have the wherewithal to do good, do they? That's the common state of man. Now, the word foolish means to be senseless or without reason. It's the lack of mental sanity and sobriety. Or it would say that they are without spiritual perception or the ability to live as God requires. Wisdom is more in relation. When you have knowledge, that's information. What is right? Wisdom is putting right that knowledge into right practice. How can I live out the knowledge I have? That's where wisdom comes in. Do you remember the rich fool in Luke 12? Where he had a great harvest? He didn't know what to do because he didn't have room for all his crops. So he pulled down his barns and built bigger barns. And then he put his crops in these bigger barns. And then he was able to say to himself, I have all that I need for many years, all laid up, ready for me to enjoy. So I'll take my ease, eat, drink, and be merry, live off the fat of the land for the rest of my life. But God said unto him, thou fool. Is that how we should plan our lives? No. Thou fool. That's the same word. This night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So here's a description of folly. So is he that lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. That's folly. It's also the result of their willful rejection of God and His truth. Now all truth and all wisdom comes from God. To reject that is to be cast necessarily into folly. Robin, if you'll read Romans 1:21-22, I'd appreciate it. Romans 1:21-22. Right? They didn't glorify God, so what was left? They glorified themselves. They became puffed up. Their imaginations became vain. Their hearts became foolish and darkened. They professed their own wisdom, but what were they in actuality? Having turned away from God and going after their own devices, they became fools. Now, this is the very opposite of knowing and doing the revealed will of God. Remember what it said in Ephesians 5:17? And be not unwise. That's this word. Don't be foolish, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. They do not understand or do the will of the Lord, and so they're foolish. So we see from this that it's the common practice of unbelievers to be hostile and antagonistic against us because of our Christian faith and lifestyle. And the way they show their hatred toward us is by speaking evil of us and falsely accusing us. Especially, the one thing they really like to accuse us of is of acting insubordinately toward our government. Look at Luke 20. Luke 20. Says the chief priests in verse 19, and the scribes the same hour sought to lay hands on him, and they feared the people, for they perceived that he had spoken this parable against them, and they watched him and sent forth spies which should feign themselves just men, that they might take hold of his words, and so they might deliver him under the power and authority of the governor. Right, there was their intention. Get him to say something that they could accuse him to the governor and have him arrested and punished for it. They asked him, saying, Master, they tried to set him up. And the best way to set someone up is to butter him up for the fall, right? Butter is very slippery. They put butter on you so you'll fall easier. Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly. Neither acceptest thou the person of any, but teachest the way of God truly. We know you're going to tell it like it is and not worry about who thinks what. Is it lawful for us to give tribute to Caesar or no? Show that you're a man of, you know, courage, and that you can stand on your own 2 feet, and you'll tell Caesar what's what and put him in his place, won't you? That's what they're trying to get him to do, so that they can accuse him. You remember in chapter 23 of Luke, when they finally brought Jesus to Pilate, verse 2, they began to accuse him, saying, we found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ the King. In verse 5, they were the more fierce, saying, he stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Jewry, beginning from Galilee to this place. Well, then he sent him to Herod. Herod couldn't find where he'd done any wrong. And then in verse 14, he says, you have brought this man into me as one that perverts the people. And that's what they accuse him of. He's stirring up rebellion and insurrection. Behold, I have examined him before you and have found no fault in this man touching those things whereof you accuse him. No, nor yet Herod. In other words, their accusations were obviously false. But what did Jesus say in Matthew 5, 10 and 11? Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Or don't worry about when earthly kingdoms arrest you and punish you and cast you out, banish you. You have a greater kingdom in heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Or as they're going to do this, don't let it depress you. Don't let it discourage you. Don't get down in the dumps about it. Rejoice. You're blessed when this happens. Be glad. Your reward will be great in heaven. So our best defense against these attacks of the wicked is to live a blameless and inoffensive life so that our enemies will either be forced to close their mouths, or if their venom and hatred compels them to continue their evil attacks, they just can't be still and quiet. Our life will be so above reproach that it will be obvious to all that their charges are false. In other words, their charges will fall off us like water on a duck's back because it's going to be clear to everybody that it's something they're making up because there's nothing in our lives that gives any credence to their charges. And that's a good way to silence them. It makes their accusations completely powerless. Unless you have a government that wants to get rid of Christians, they love to have false accusations to give them appearance of an excuse to eradicate them. And so we are to be in submission to government in order to stop the mouths of the wicked. And yet we're to do this in verse 16. It says, as free. You are to be under authority as free men. And that's what we're going to have to look at next time. How can we be in subjection as free? Isn't that a contradiction? Isn't subjection and freedom two opposite things? Well, no. Christians are to be in subjection to government as those that are free in Christ. And we'll go on and explain how that is. But it's 7:30, so we'll close there and wait till next time. Now, sometimes we try to argue and defend ourselves and prove our point and show people they're wrong. Sometimes we have to ignore all their charges, all their jaw flappings against us, and just go about our business and keep on being faithful and do what God's told us to do and let Him take care of the results, right? That's really the best argument for our faith and why we live as we live, is just keep on doing it. Their talk will come to nothing. You know, their words will do us no real harm. They'll be of none effect. God will defend us. You remember what He said? I ought to close with this now that I'm thinking about it. As soon as I find it here. And I thought it was there, but it isn't. But I can tell you what it says. It says that no weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper. Anyone know that reference right offhand? I don't think 43. I was thinking 50-something, but it might be closer to that. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper. I think I can find it fast. I won't say fast, but I think I can find it. Ah, 54:17. I knew it was a 17, but I couldn't think of the chapter. I was thinking 50:17. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment, thou shalt condemn. How do you like that? No matter what they try to do, no one can harm you if you be followers of that which is good. Every time they speak against you, if your cause is just, you will prove them to be false. You will condemn those who condemn you. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Lord. He shall bring forth your righteousness as your light, and your judgment as the noonday. That's a great promise. And that's what we have from God as believers in Jesus Christ. It's our heritage, part of what He has given us in our salvation.